Let's go ahead and take our seats and get started. My name's Robin, and I'm an alcoholic. Let's go ahead and have a moment of silence and gratitude for the AA recoveries of the past 75 years. What a wonderful topic, my home group. I think that's the greatest topic ever, because I think I love my home group so much, you know, and we're so active in AA and the service structure of AA, and I'm very passionate about my home group. So I'm so excited to hear other people's passions about their home group and what they're doing in their home group. So I'd like to give you Sue. She's going to be our first speaker.
I'm Sue. I'm an alcoholic. Oh, I was wondering about that. They have a clock up here so that you can actually clearly see the time, which is awesome. It's really an honor to be asked to share with you all today, and I'm so grateful for my recovery today and for the conference. And this is my second one, and it's been a gift to be here with my friends. And we go back to our hometowns and we talk about what we saw and heard and felt here. And there's always going to be some people that will just kind of think that we're on something and that they'll never really know until the first time they come here. And my sponsor came back from three conferences ago. She came back from that conference and she said, God willing, I'll never miss another one. And I really heard that, and I go back. I went back from Toronto and said the same thing. I have a sponsee here with me today, and I have my sponsor here with me today. And it's just beautiful to be surrounded by all of the AA, the beautiful AA love that's here for us. That's not how I felt when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous. I really didn't want to let people in, and I'm going to tell you a little bit about my drinking, and maybe that will make sense to you that I didn't want to let people in. I know that I was always small, and I didn't get served a lot of alcohol when I was a teenager, unlike some of us. But I had alcoholic drinking experiences from the get-go, and I actually believe I was born with the allergy to alcohol, just based on the way that I only know that because when I drank, right from the beginning, it went, it went past the point of no return. And, not my first drink. My first drink was a blackout, but my one of my early drinks, I was a camp counselor. And I like to tell this story because it really is the cycle of my alcoholism. I just remember I was a camp counselor, promise, hope, health. It was all that sort of stuff that I was surrounded by. And I was meeting new friends, and I was away from my alcoholic home. So it was just like a sense of normalcy. And I went out drinking with the other counselors, and I never would have got served if it weren't for the fact that I was with a bunch of people that were able to get served, and we were in a small town. And it started well enough, and there was this, the water ski instructor kind of liked me, and we were having fun, and it finished after that time at the bar with the water ski instructors dropping me off at the gates to the camp and not really wanting to have too much to do with me. And somehow I had it in my mind that it was a really good time to go and talk to the camp director and tell him how much I liked working there. And that was like at 3 or 4 in the morning. I woke him up, and I woke up his wife, and I knocked on his door and told him that. And for the next few days, like the next morning, of course I had a lot of shame, but for the next few days they considered what they were going to do with me. They had lots of closed door meetings, and that guilt and shame hung over me. I knew I was different than everybody else at that summer camp, absolutely. And I knew that I couldn't live life. I didn't have the tools to kind of live life like all these other people. And I was very alone in that camp full of people. They decided to, I stayed on that summer, and I know that for my hiring appointment the next year, when I went for the hiring appointment, they said, we're going to offer you a job, but we're not going to give you a raise because you're not really Onondaga material. And I knew that they were right. It didn't get much better. My alcoholism didn't get much better. I definitely came into AA feeling like, in life, I had no matter how hard I tried, I wasn't able to do it like other people. And people looked at me with that sort of "what's wrong with her" look. And you know, I have a twin sister who I love dearly, and you know, she used to fly to cities that I would end up in on a drinking jag, and you know, bail me out with money and just try and make sure I wasn't getting into the hard stuff, and get me home again. And she had that look in her eyes, and my mom had that look in her eyes, and you know, and that's what I thought of myself when I got here. So I did not want to let you guys in, you know. Lots of other stuff happened when I was drinking. But the topic here today is the home group, and it's not, you know, I know I've walked around and talked to a lot of you at this conference, and I know that I'm not going to teach anybody here about home group, but I do have my experience about home group and my home group and how it saved my life, and I hope to share that with you. I'm just going to take a moment to just talk to God again. So my drinking progressed. It never got any better than that, and it did get to some really dark places. And eventually there came a day when, for the last year of my drinking, the blinds had been drawn. I had shut you guys out more and more, and stopped answering calls, lied to people to change my plans, so that I could drink the way I wanted to. And I knew I had to drink at home because I couldn't drink in front of the rest of you guys. And my world had become quite small. And it was the morning after a night before another breakup with my boyfriend. And I had fuzzy recollections of saying some really mean things to him and him not letting me in his place. But it was very fuzzy. That morning, I got a phone call from somebody. You know, over the last couple of weeks, I'd heard she was back in town. She'd been away, and people were saying to me, "Have you seen her? Have you seen Susie? She's different. Something's happened. She's changed." And they were saying, you know, essentially, she's not just changed on the outside. She's inwardly reorganized. You know, essentially, is what they were saying. There's something really different. No. Really different about her. And I got a phone call from her that morning at 8:30 in the morning when I was just kind of literally saying, if this is all there is, it isn't worth it. And that was the ongoing thought that I'd had for the last year of my drinking. And I said, please God, help me. You know, some form of it. It was really kind of like, please God, make this stop. You know, it wasn't help me. I didn't really know how to ask for help then. But I received a phone call from her, and she was talking, and I was half listening the way I do. And she was going, you know, talking about herself. I was thinking about myself. I wasn't really present. But she told me that she was really excited to be seeing somebody that she used to party with. That was when she used to drink. But now she's sober. And that word just kind of jumped out of the phone, you know, into the room that I was sitting in my hungover state. And it was just, it sat there. And I don't know if she kept talking, but I, like, that word was the first word that got through. And she must have heard the pause that I had, or the, you know, something, because she said, you know, if you ever want to go to one of those meetings, I go all the time. Or I that's what it was. I said, how did that happen? How did that happen? Because I know that she drank, you know, like I would see her and she'd be messy in the bars and I'd be, you know, taking my car driving drunk home. But I think if I ever get that bad, I'm going to do something about my drinking. And I laugh at that today, but it's just, it's scary and sad. So I stumbled out something about how did that happen? And she said, you know, I was, there were lots of, you know, there's lots of things in my life that were out of my control. You know, I couldn't control my money, and I was always minus zero at the bank account. My relationships weren't working out. I didn't have a good relationship with my family. I didn't have good relationships with, marital type relationships. I didn't have good friendships, and just nothing was working out in my life. And I didn't, you know, drinking was sort of the only thing I had that kind of gave me any peace, but it was also the only thing I could do anything about. And I met more and more sober people, and they seemed to, all these other problems in their lives started to sort themselves out. And, you know, where I didn't know that I had a problem with alcohol, I knew that alcohol was the solution. I did know that it gave me that sense of peace. I wasn't ready to give it up. I didn't know that that's what was going to happen here. But I did totally relate, totally, to the, all the elements of my life not working. It was like my mom used to say to me, I love the fact that you can keep getting up and dusting yourself off, but why do you have to keep falling down? What's wrong with you? And you know, so I said, oh, that's very nice. Talk to you later. And, you know, later, bye. And hung up the phone. I mean, literally, I was off the phone in 2 minutes after she invited me to go to a meeting. But, you know, it was 8:30 or 9 in the morning, and the day started to stretch out in front of me. I had been drinking earlier and earlier in the daytime, in the days, and I knew that that bottle was going to happen before noon, you know, or not too much into the afternoon, and I knew that my world was getting smaller. So I did the only thing I could think of, and I picked up the phone and called her back, like, 10 minutes later, and I said, hey. I said, are you going to one of those meetings tonight? Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm going. I go all the time, you know, so... So I went and met her at my first meeting, which didn't end up becoming my home group, but I started to, you know, to be on fire with Alcoholics Anonymous after that. I you know, my life, I didn't know what you guys had for me. I knew that you guys seemed to be in a state of peace, but I didn't know, you know, what living without alcohol was going to be like at all, you know. And I, the only thing that kept me here was that the life that I had been living, and I really wish this for every woman I sponsor today, the life that I had been living was so scary that I was just, on a daily basis, that was the fork in the road. That was the jet fuel. I call it my jet fuel that kept propelling me to just do the next right thing, complaining about it, defiant, arguing why this wasn't going to work for me, but just it was my jet fuel to do the very next right thing. And I joined a home group. One of my original home group members is here today, and which is awesome. I eventually moved and picked a home group closer to me, but it was my home group for my first 3 years of recovery. And you know, I was scared when I walked in there, and I joined it, and then I didn't go to it for a year. And it was about the time of my 1 year cake, because I didn't really want to let anybody get to know me. I would go to meetings around town, and I would just kind of cruise in as the meeting was starting, and I would leave right after the meeting was over, and I would go and use outside substances, and that was the very best I could do. I collected numbers. But around the time of my first 1 year cake, because I had to change my date, but around the time of my first 1 year cake, I thought, you know, I better let them get to know me. I mean, they don't even know who I am, and I'm going to take my cake there, and I do want to take it because it's kind of all about me, and I'll get some cards, and there'll be some flowers, and I'm going to show everybody how well I'm doing, and maybe they'll get off my back. It's all good. And so I joined my home group. I mean, I started going to my home group meeting regularly, and I joined the business meeting. I went to the business meeting. It was recommended, I got a service position. I made coffee at my home group, and that was my very first service position. And I was still using outside substances. And what was, you know, because the thing is that when I put down the drink, life, I didn't want to experience that, you know. And you know, I, not only that, it was pure survival. I actually think that, you know, I didn't realize how sick I was with alcoholism, but I had to kind of medicate until I found the solution that you guys were offering. And I didn't find the solution that you guys were offering until I put down, you know, it's kind of one of those weird catch-22s in Alcoholics Anonymous. But how I found that solution that you guys were offering was by becoming a part of my home group. So I went to the business meeting. I took the coffee position, which was just like, oh, my God, people complained about the way I made coffee. And I went to the first business meeting I went to, I left crying. My sponsor caught me at the door, and she's like, business meeting? And I was like, yeah. And she goes, oh, it gets better. It gets better. And I didn't know that that's how an informed group conscience worked. I didn't know that we were getting informed when people were yelling back and forth. And it just scared the pants off of me because, you know, all I knew was I didn't want to do what I was doing anymore. But when you guys fought in the business meeting, I actually thought that I wasn't going to get sober. I thought that somehow that was going to, you know, jeopardize my ability to get sober. If the meeting wasn't going to hang together, then what was going to be here for me? You know, I even had a sense of it even before I put down everything. All, you know, so how I ended up being honest with myself was I was making coffee, and I was therefore early at the meetings, and And, you know, people started to get to know me, and they started to, you know, that saying that we have is love me till I can love myself. You know, to me, that's like, they let me be. Like, I had lots of crises, lots of chaos, lots of unmanageability in my life, and they just let me be. And they listened, and they kind of nodded their heads knowingly. They didn't try and solve my problems. But they were there, you know, and they sometimes shared about their own experience. And sometimes that helped, you know. And shortly after I took my first 1 year cake, I got that I was powerless and you know, over everything, and I, you know, that my life was unmanageable, and that the only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking, and alcohol was my, you know, what brought me here. That for me, I wasn't sober. So, you know, I from that point on, I did a lot of different volunteer positions in my home group, and my home group was very active in having, you know, I could rotate once I, you know, finally knew how to make a pot of coffee. I could rotate to make the sandwiches that night, and that, you know, for the next couple of months I could make the sandwiches, and when finally people stopped complaining about the sandwiches, I could go and rotate and be, you know, and you know, I had dreams of being the president of AA someday, but I knew that from sandwich maker it was going to be a long road ahead, but you know, but what happened in the meantime is that sobriety was manufactured, you know, and, you know, I really recommend, you know, that if you don't have a home group where there's lots of service positions, or if it's just a meeting that was started by a bunch of guys and they're the only guys that get to do the service, it's not going to work. It wouldn't have worked for me. So I'm really glad that the home group I walked into the doors of had lots of service positions and had those erstwhile erratic business meetings where erstwhile erratic alcoholics somehow came together and group conscience was done. You know, I after some time in Alcoholics Anonymous, I was 3.5 years sober, and I had bought a house in another part of town, and you know, which was never on the path for me. You know, when I got sober, I was living out of boxes, and I'd been living in that rented kind of shoddy place on the downtown east side for 8 years. It wasn't that I hadn't had time pack yet. You know, that's just the way I lived when I got sober. You know, so, and, you know, 3.5 years sober, you know, what I was never going to do was own property. And, you know, and here I was actually having, you know, successful relationships. And actually, you know, that boyfriend who I'd had that hazy recollection of breaking up with, we were moving in together and buying a house together. You know, my relationships were actually on track of working out. I mean, this is all stuff that my home group loving me did for me. But when I, you know, moved, I had to suddenly go to, you know, find another home group that I could actually get to on a regular basis. And, you know, it was a rough time because my dad passed away just around that time. And I was feeling emotionally vulnerable, just like the beginning. I was feeling like a newcomer. And, you know, I remember driving home from that new home group crying because nobody knew me. And because, I felt so apart from yet again in sobriety. And, you know, I had this revelation driving home. I'm gonna let them get to know me. And, it was like, you know, it sounds like an obvious thing, but it was a real revelation. It's one of those moments. And I went to the next business meeting, and I put up my hand to make coffee. And, you know, and again, just like it had right in the very beginning, it worked for me. And I'm still a member of that home group, Tuesday West Vancouver. And I welcome you all there if you ever find yourself in Vancouver, Canada. It has lots of service positions. We, you know, it's sort of like, why would I leave my home group now? You know, service has kept me sober. There's lots of service positions in my home group. But, you know, it's actually, you know, if you want to go fishing, go where the fish are. If you're going to stay sober by carrying the message to the alcoholic who still suffers, guess what? They come to my meeting, and they come to my meeting because it has an active business meeting, which is sometimes a little crazy. There's service positions for everybody, and recovery is manufactured there. And, you know, so I can go, you know, I don't have to go too far to find the alcoholic who still suffers, you know, and in my busy schedule, that because I have that life that Alcoholics Anonymous gave me back, it's nice for me to just know where I'm going to find the next one I can maybe help. And or they can help me, really, but they think I'm helping them, so that's good. You know, it's been an honor to be here. I really appreciate, you know, just an amazing honor to be sharing here with you today, surrounded by love. And I had a girlfriend yesterday who said to me, "You're such a kind, not self-centered person." And I just kind of like, I don't even know what to say about that, because that's you guys, and that's my home group. doing that to me, because that is not, you know, I was painfully self-centered, and nobody would have described me as kind when I got here. So, you know, thank you for the miracle of Alcoholics Anonymous, and for giving me 14 years of beautiful sobriety. Thanks.
That was wonderful. They said I can share a little bit between speakers. So, you know, what I got out of that was, you know, this is a program of attraction rather than promotion. You know, in a group that's so attractive like Sue's, that's wonderful. You know, that's what, and she had mentioned being on fire for Alcoholics Anonymous. And that's so wonderful at hopefully your home group too, you know, that everybody there, you know, between 80 and 90 active members of my home group, there's so many people that are on fire for Alcoholics Anonymous, and that's attractive. I think that's what attracts the newcomer, you know, and it's our responsibility that when anyone anywhere reaches out, we want the hand of AA to always be there. So anyways, I'd like to give you Artie.
My name's Artie. I'm an alcoholic. Grateful to be here today, clean and sober. This is D-Day. I've been thinking about this for 3 months. My area is Area 43, New Hampshire. Is there anybody here from New Hampshire? I've got some support. That's what it's all about. My home group is the North Conway, New Hampshire Beginners Meeting. Awesome group. If you all want to see us, I'm catching that y'all stuff. It's only 2,147 miles from here. Come on up and see us. My home group. What an awesome topic. When I was asked to speak, it's like, what am I going to speak about? When they gave me home group, I said, well, that's an easy subject for me. Faith and fear, that type of subject would have been more difficult. My first home group was at the Iron Bar Hotel. Can anyone identify with that? And that was awesome. I am forever grateful for that. I got sober there on 12-1 of 93. And I haven't found it necessary to have a drink or a drug since. Obviously, I was there because of alcohol and drugs. You know, I was a high-bottom drunk. I had 11 DWIs. My criminal record is taller than I am. I know this because I'm trying to have the stuff expunged. And my lawyer told me it might take up to 10 grand in 2 or 3 years. That was all the wreckage of my past. My first real home group was the Hard Hat, Manchester, New Hampshire. That home group was awesome. I remember I joined it, and I went on a commitment, and the commitment was 17 of us. We drove about 60 miles to Rochester, and we put on a commitment. We all had 2.5 minutes, and we were told that we'd be promptly shut up if we exceeded it, and that's how it worked. We all got active, and I remember one business meeting. Our business meetings were huge. There'd be 30, 40, 50 people, and I was bitching because, number one. I was complaining because I couldn't get a job, and I wanted to be active in service, and it took the next business meeting, 6 months after we rotated to get a job, and I was coffee maker. But one of the wonderful things about the Hard Hat group is all the men from that group also went to the men's 12 and 12, and I learned so much from those people, and I learned that change is what it's all about. I was told I only had to change one thing. That was everything. And, you know, it was awesome. But back to getting sober in prison. I want to personally thank each and every one of you that go to the prisons and those type of places to bring meetings in, because it was my lifeline. It was what kept me going. It was what was able to get me through all those feelings of maybe abandonment and stuff like that. It gave me hope. It showed me that people really do care. And that's incredible. So to all you people that bring meetings into facilities, thank you so much. It's awesome. Me and my wife, we do it now. It's great. I bring my wife into the men's prison up in Berlin, New Hampshire. And, you know, she says, it's like 35 miles away. When we go up there, it's always we're busy. And, oh, geez, I wish it wasn't tonight. And when we leave, we're always on this pink cloud. It's like, great. My wife says, wow, I wish I could bring these guys home with us. It's like, what, are you crazy? But it's what keeps us going, and we have a boat. We have an old boat, and we keep it in Portland, Maine. And because we're over there, we go to the Portland County Jail, and that's so cool. It's all about giving back, and what can I do? Back to the Hard Hat group. The Hard Hat was I was with it for the whole time I was in Manchester. I moved a few years ago to North Conway, New Hampshire, and We had a problem for a while, and it was the, you know, people. First, we relocated because, well, a political thing happened, and the guy that was the president of the Steelworkers Association got replaced by somebody else, and we ended up moving. We went to the inner city, and a lot of people with court papers were coming in. Some people didn't want it. We voted to keep it. I personally voted to keep the court slips because I think it's necessary. And we did come up with an idea. When they come in, sign it, give it back to them. If they leave, it's on them. We're not affiliated with the court systems. You know, we did have some people, oh, no, we got to make sure they stay. Oh, I'm not here to be an AA cop. And the day I have to be an AA cop, I'll probably be out the door. Give them the slip back. If they leave, it's on them. If they stay, it's good. But we had a problem. We started losing people. And we got down to about two of us. And that, you know, regular members. And this is from like 150 people. And we got down to about two of us. And we finally were able to take a vote. And we relocated. Now Hard Hat is back up to about 150 people again. It's one of these meetings where you have to get there half an hour early to get a seat. And I love that. I mean, and the original Hard Hat, the best part was you walk in and it was all smoky. And it's like, oh, geez, I fit right into this place. But that was my, you know, original home group, and I learned so much. I learned a lot of little silly sayings that were so profound. One of them was, if I do what I did, I'll get what I got. Think about it. If I do what I did, I'll get what I got. I had to, you know, I'm sick of the most. I had to, you know, process that one for a couple of days. There's this other woman, Debbie D., and she said, if I stick to the basics, I'll never have to go back to the basics. How profound is that? You know, how profound, if I, you know, you come in, do 90 and 90, well, if I go to a lot of meetings, I'll be getting the same things back. I'll be getting that inner peace. I'll be staying sober. And that's cool. Her husband, great guy, Richie D., I remember I wanted him to be my sponsor. Richie D. was this guy that was a bank robber. He did 16 years behind the walls. I wanted him to be my sponsor. So for me, asking somebody to be a sponsor is almost like asking a girl, if I'm sober, for a date. You know, it's not easy. So I asked him. He said, no. I won't tell you what I was thinking inside my mind because it's probably not the right words. But several years later, he told me, Heidi, I said no because AA is about staying sober. It's not about talking about crap behind the walls. And it was so cool. Now, the biggest thing that I learned about this is I ended up with this other guy named Wayne L. for my sponsor. Somebody suggested it, and so I asked him. I didn't know anything about Wayne. Wayne was awesome. Wayne worked me through the steps. Come to find out, you know, I thought I needed somebody that was, like, been to prison, too, who else is going to understand me? Wayne never got a DWI. Now, I don't comprehend how anybody can be an alcoholic and not have a DWI. I'm sorry. I don't understand it. I mean, there is nothing better than to take the back roads drinking. You know, like Michelob, Budweiser between your legs, or, I don't know, a little Jack Daniels. A Wild Turkey was always good. But to have a bottle between your legs driving through the back roads. He never had a DWI. You know, I don't understand it. Wayne never went to jail either. Oh, he spent a night in jail, but I don't know. To me, a night in jail isn't really going to jail. And Wayne was my sponsor. He was one alcoholic talking to another alcoholic, and that's all it is. And it's all about how we feel, not what we did, not the situations. It's how we felt. And Wayne was awesome. He was incredible. I did fire him as my sponsor. When he quit going to Hard Hat, I got pissed, and I fired him. Pissed isn't a swear. Anyway, I fired him because I thought I learned that as far as being an AA, I need to be part of the solution and not part of the problem. And it was one of the first times that I really applied that because it was difficult. My love for my home group was so thick that, you know, I needed to be part of the solution and not part of the problem. And we got relocated and it's thriving now, so I think that's so great. My home group, a couple other things. I remember some really tragic stuff happened, and my home group got me through it. The first one was my dad passed away. Now, my dad, you got to understand, my dad is the guy that I blame for all my problems. My dad was the guy that had a barber strap that he cut into five strands, and when he used to hit me with it when I did something wrong, it would cause bleeding welts and stuff, and so I blamed him forever. And by getting sober and working through the steps, I was able to forgive myself. Then by forgiving myself, I was able to forgive him. We developed a wonderful relationship. When my dad passed away, people came to my home to make sure I was okay. They brought food. They said, "Honey, what can we do for you?" And I'm like, I don't know what's going on. My head's swirling. And Adi, do you need, you know, we had four kids, and, you know, I had to go to California, and people took care of my children. People took care of making sure that everything was okay. And I got through it. And it was so cool. I used to think the AA, the hub of AA was Manchester, New Hampshire. So when we got to California, and they had services, and it was horrible. My dad didn't like people talking about him, and it was a circle of us. Everybody's talking about my dad, and I got disgusted, and I walked out because I knew my dad wouldn't like that. And I went outside. The preacher guy that was at their home came, and he says, "Hey, can I talk to you for a minute?" "Sure." He says, "I understand you're in AA." I said, "Yes, I am." He says, "Well, I'm from the Salvation Army, and we have meetings there. Would you like to go to a meeting?" I said, "I'd love to." He says, "Well, ours is based around Jesus Christ, and there's also another one based around a higher power." I said, Where's the higher power one? Because I don't know. I don't know what God is. I believe in God. I just don't know what it is, and I like the higher power thing. Higher power thing really helped keep me in AA. I went to that meeting. I shared there, and I tell you what, I fit in. I felt like I was at home again, just like in New Hampshire. So I guess AA is everywhere. So I got through that. Then I remember another traumatic thing happened. I had a wife that passed away, and we had, you know, she had actually four children, and I was a stepdad, and same thing. You know, you people from the program came to my home. I was at the lake, and the lake is about 50 miles from where I live, and I got back home, and there was like 20 or 30 people. My front porch was just loaded with AA people. I was like, wow, and you guys got me through another thing, and life happens. And, you know, people from AA were always there. When I was in prison, not one person from my drinking career came to see me. I remember I asked one old friend if he could send like $10, $15 so I could get some stamps. The son of a gun, I caught myself. The son of a gun never even wrote back. And it's like, wow. But whenever something's happened in AA, you guys have always been there. And that's incredible. I'm having a blast here in San Antonio. This has been an incredible experience. The best one I've had so far is yesterday. Yesterday, you know, we volunteered for several different days to help to be one of those green shirts. And yesterday, I'm a little bit hot, and we're talking about blowing off our responsibility, and it's like, I don't know, I can't do that. We can't volunteer and not do it. So we're out there. Come to find out, we're like where everybody walks from out of here going towards the Alamo Dome. And so we were there for a while. Then our shift was over, but we just, like, kept on going out there. And I'm catching people as they're walking along and saying, "It's all good, right?" And yeah, it's all good, people doing this. And I bet you I made at least 5,000 people either smile or laugh yesterday. That's incredible. I like that. I mean, I didn't care about people. I didn't care about stuff like that before I got sober. Now it's so awesome to be able to do something simple, to make somebody smile, to make somebody laugh. I love that. I wasn't going to come here, you know, to San Antonio. I have a service sponsor. Not that I asked to have a service sponsor. One day, last year, we were having a service assembly, and this guy come up to me. "Hey, guess what?" I said, "What?" "I have a new job." I said, "Really? What's that?" He said, "I'm now your service sponsor." It's like, oh, joy. So anyway, our service sponsor, he became our delegate. I know, oh joy, even worse. He called me, you know, several months ago, and he says, "Hey, you going to San Antonio?" And I said, "Nah, I don't think so. I'm kind of busy. I want to go to the Bridge and Gap convention," and, you know. He said, "Well, I'd like you to go." And in my home group early on, I was taught if somebody ever asks you to something, you never say no. Unless you absolutely can't, you don't say no. And so I said, "Okay, I'll go." He said, "Good, I'm going to put your name in a hat to speak." Whoa. He said, "Adi, what's wrong? I've never seen you at a loss for words." I said, "Well, what you're asking is, like, huge." And so it's like, okay. And I figured, you know, okay, out of all the people, they're not going to pick me. And guess what? I'm here. I'm up here. I've also had the opportunity to to see a service sponsee speak yesterday, and he had the room with 6,000 people. This one's kind of easy. So he did a great job, and we have this other woman I heard yesterday, Maria. She was awesome, and I'm looking forward to hear Diana to speak today from our area. This is pretty cool. I didn't really take, you know, Maria took a couple notes. I didn't take any notes, and I remember the first time I spoke, I was scared to death. You thought I was going to say that other word, huh? I was scared to death, and I remember the guy gave me a two-week notice, and during that 2 weeks, I thought of everything I was going to say. I mean, I had it down in my head. I had names, dates, places, the whole chronology of it all, and I went to the podium. I lasted 45 seconds, and I nosedived. A couple days later, walking and asked a friend of mine, I says, you know, what went wrong? He says, Artie, next time you speak, ask God for help. So I don't know if you noticed, but just before I get up here, I asked the big guy, hey, help me get me through this one. Help me to speak your words, not my own. Help me keep my ego out of the way. And that's what I do. To prepare for coming here, though, I did a lot of reading. I reread the big book again. I read the home group Heartbeat of AA. On the way here, my service sponsor also gave me volume 2 of the home group. And I listened to that, and there's something in it that's a little controversial, and I probably shouldn't bring it up, but I'm gonna. That's how I am. It talks about the alcoholic addict. It talks how we have the left-wing people that say, keep your mouth shut and don't talk about it. You got the middle-of-the-road people that say, hey, keep it to a minimum. And you got the other wing that says, hey, anything goes. And I want to thank my home group to allow me to come into the program to be an addict alcoholic. After a while, I became an alcoholic addict. And you loved me to the point where I became a simple alcoholic. That was very important. I see some people that may be a little bit nasty to the person that's an addict alcoholic. I'm so grateful that I was loved into being a simple alcoholic. And it happens because I know it personally, because I was given that chance to grow. And that's very important. So that's the only controversial issue I'll hit today. But anyway, I am so grateful to be here. And I have this wonderful friend from Manchester that's here. I know that this person may not be doing so well, but my heart goes out to her, and thank you so much for being here. Thank you.
That was wonderful. I like his accent. I'm an Okie. I'm from Tulsa, Oklahoma, so you don't get to hear that very often. Oh, you know, the most important position that you can ever have at a home group is the coffee maker. You know, that's the most important position. And, you know, and I think that's, it's coupled with the greeter. You know, it's so important to have that person right there at the door when that newcomer comes in. I hate it when I have to miss my meeting, you know, when I miss my home group because I'm traveling, or I used to work for a company that would travel around the United States, and I hated missing my group because when I came back, there were people I didn't know. You know, I'm like, who are these newcomers? Why don't I know them? You know, and that's why I think that gives me the fire to, you know, I'm there. I'm there when those doors are open. I'm at that meeting, and I've got my hand out, and it's so important. It's so important to be that person there and direct them to the coffee. And hey, look, we have a beginner's meeting in this room. You can learn about the disease of alcoholism. You can see if this is where you belong. And it's so important. It's vitally important that that hand of AA always be there. Now I would like to introduce you to Michaeline.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Michaeline, and I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is November 20th, 1989. My home group is the Back to Basics group, which meets Friday night in Bloomington, Indiana. At 8 o'clock, if you're ever in Bloomington, please come and see us. And I have a sponsor who happens to be two doors down talking at the same time, so I don't get to see her. And I sponsor, and several of the women that I sponsor are in the room today, so I'm really grateful that they're here. And also, a lady is here that I sponsored 7 years ago and moved away. And she came here to see me today. And, you know, that's Part of that is all about what you learn about in a home group. So I'm really grateful to be here today. I would also like to thank Rick for the loving invitation. I did have an opportunity to be on a panel in Toronto, and I talked about the warranties. So this is really a wonderful topic to talk about my home group. Wow. I'm just going to tell you a little bit about what got me to Alcoholics Anonymous, because what you need to understand is, although I drank to the point where I walked out on everything that was important to me, I love when people talk in meetings about how what they lost. I didn't lose a thing, folks. I walked out on all of it. Although I lost everything that was important to me, I really believed that if you just took my advice and you just did what I told you to do, my life would be wonderful. And I honestly, truly believe that with all of my heart. I have two daughters that, my two oldest actually, that one is still trying to get here. And when she was a teenager, she came in and out of treatment centers. And I would go to the treatment center and I would say, yeah, I'm an alcoholic. Now, I can't tell you what I thought that meant. I really don't. I continuously drank for only 2 years because at that point I was suicidal and had tried to kill myself several times. So I made myself into a binge drinker. It was so painful. The way I describe it is I went through life like this. And when I couldn't stand the way you were acting anymore, I'd go on a binge to get that relief, that sense of ease and comfort that I only got from this, which at that time I thought came from alcohol. I'm actually originally from Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Did most of my drinking in Wisconsin, but I, during this period when I was doing binging, I managed to get a college degree and decided to go on to get a master's degree and ended up in Bloomington, Indiana. And, you know, when we are binge drinking or even when we're drinking regularly, there's something we're always looking for because, you know, there's that hole that keeps getting bigger. And since we don't have a higher power of our own understanding to fill it with, we try to fill it with something else. Mine was men. Any women recognize that kind of concept? So I met a man. Now, and I don't know how this happens, except for that I do know God is in charge. And the first place this gentleman took me on a date was to a bar. And the second date we were supposed to go on, he stood me up because he went to have a couple before he picked me up and never left. Now, this is his story, not mine, and he, by the grace of God, is still sober and Alcoholics Anonymous. But what he says is, I really thought I'd want to see this lady again, so I just decided I would say something to her that would make her feel sympathy for me. So I went to see him because we were both in school at the same university, and he said, you know, I think I might be an alcoholic. You know, I've got kids going through treatment centers. I don't go to AA. Well, I did go to AA meetings for a while when I was trying to date another guy in Wisconsin, but that's another story. But I said I was an alcoholic, even though I didn't know what that meant. And so I can get you sober. I know what AA is, and I know where I can find meetings. We took him to a couple of meetings, and, you know, I went in the room the way I did when I was in Wisconsin. If he got sober, I would be fine. If my kids got sober, I would be fine. We went to two meetings. He decided, thank you, but no thank you. I don't need AA. And so he's going to stay sober on his own. And after a month, I did what every good, self-respecting alcoholic does. Usually it's the second date. How do you tell an alcoholic on the second date? The moving van? It took me a month, but, you know, there was a moving van. I should have had a clue because when my one requirement to move in with him was that we had to get trash pickup because there were 45 bags of garbage in the basement. We did get rid of those. I helped considerably. I'm very helpful, by the way. He ended up in treatment. In between this time, my daughters had ended up in treatment again at a wonderful facility, and there was a woman who did aftercare. And she would say to me, "You always say you're an alcoholic. Do you go to AA?" "No, no, 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 no. If they do fine, I'll be fine." He ended up in the adult version of that treatment center and went to the same aftercare. And she would say to me, "Are you going to go to Alcoholics Anonymous?" "No, no, 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 no. If he doesn't drink, I'll be fine." But you see, I wanted to make sure he would get sober. So when he went to his first group meeting in Bloomington, Indiana, I decided to go along. And I introduced myself. "I'm Michaeline. I'm an alcoholic." I don't know what I thought that meant. But you started to talk, and for the first time ever in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, I found out who I was. And that meeting was the Back to Basics group. That was over 20 years ago, and it is still my home group. I love that meeting. I love the people in it. One of my home group members is here today, and I have chills just talking about it because those are the people that saved my life. So what attracted me to that meeting, besides the fact that the guy I was dating was going there? One of the things was, you guys told me I needed to get a sponsor. And there was a woman there that when she talked, she had what I wanted. So I asked her to be my sponsor. Now, my sponsor today is not part of my home group. I heard somebody mention yesterday that, you know, everybody I sponsor comes to my home group and blah, 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 blah. That's not part of my belief system. My home group is my home group because that's where I do service. That's what I was taught was the place for my home group. But my sponsor's in another town. And actually, she's in another room right now. So I started doing service there. What we did is you would spend everybody that was there would take a turn being treasurer and being secretary. You did it for a year, and the person who was secretary also set up in the meeting and made coffee. Well, I was secretary 1 year and then treasurer. By then, he was my husband. He did secretary and then treasurer. So we made coffee for several years and set up the meeting and took care of the finances and made our splits and made our donations. We don't have an intergroup, so it was just a district area and GSO. And attended the business meetings and things like that. And there was a lady that used to be a part of our home group who has moved away. And she was the GSR, General Service Representative. When I was elected at 2 years sober to be the GSR, I loved that saying. Used to be I couldn't even spell GSR. Now I am one. And I started going to district meetings, and I started going to area assemblies. I was going to give you a warning when I started. That was at 2 years sober. I have been part of General Service ever since. I love service in Alcoholics Anonymous, and a lot of people in my town think when I start talking about service, I'm talking about general service. Don't forget, I said I sponsor, and I'm sponsored, and I know today that if I were to be 1,000 years old when I died, I could never give back to Alcoholics Anonymous what Alcoholics Anonymous has given me. In Bloomington, people come and go a lot, so my home group is very transient. We're a university town. We're we're about a 60,000 population. Gets a little bigger when the students are there. So my home group has really been very transient. There's a couple of us. I've been there the longest now. There was another person that was there for over 20 years. She changed home groups recently. Another person that's been there over a decade. And then we get a lot. My home group is a newcomers meeting. And I'll tell you why my group is a newcomers meeting. You see, there used to be three buses that dropped off at our meeting. Three different treatment centers, even in a small town like Bloomington. And there was a lot of discussion about, in our home group, about, well, how do we handle this? What do we do? And we decided that we were going to serve the still suffering alcoholic. So we determined as a group that we would always have a home group member chair, we would have beginners topics, and that it was the chairman's responsibility if the topic got off track of alcoholism or recovery, that the chairman would bring that topic back. We still do that today. What else do we do? We're a strange little group. We do things like everybody gets an opportunity to be a GSR. There are several people in my group that have done area service as well as district service. So we follow these weird little things called the 12 traditions. And so we will go about our business and look at how they relate to the 12 traditions, and I'm going to give you one example. Because we're a beginners meeting, we will get a lot of transient newcomers that join for a period of time. And at one point, we had a gentleman who came in and said, "You guys give out poker chips. We think you should give out the medallions with a circle and triangle on it." I was in service at the time when AA stopped using the circle and triangle as a symbol of AA, because of all of us good meeting alcoholics who want to, and by the way, I'm wearing a symbol myself of the vision for you, so I'm not going to say that I don't buy this stuff myself, but as a home group member, I want to make sure that I'm with the traditions. And so we still give out poker chips because we explain what the situation was, and when you start down that slope, it's very easy. Next thing you know, you're selling the 24-hour-a-day book, you're selling bumper stickers, you're selling things that, hey, I love drunk junk, but I buy it as an individual and not as a member of my home group. And I will tell you that because we use the traditions, just about every single vote we have is unanimous. Every vote, for the most part, is unanimous. Because when we have any, most of the time we don't have any issues. But when we do, we talk it out. A topic came up at one point about signing slips. I'm glad that was mentioned earlier. Because we, on some nights, could have 20 or 30 slips in a meeting with 60 or 70 people. And so we were talking about this home group. Should we do this? Should we do this? Should we do this? And I was chairing the meeting that night. And so I said, my topic for tonight is going to be, how do slips fit into the traditions and the spirit of Alcoholics Anonymous? We never took a second vote on that, and I'll tell you why. There was a young man who said, you know, when I came here, I had to have slips signed. And I had no intentions of staying here. I had every intention of getting my time done and leaving. But because you guys signed your slip, I heard your message. And I'm now a member of Alcoholics Anonymous in good standing. If anyone anywhere reaches out for help, I want the hand of AA to be there. And for that, my home group is responsible. We've never talked about the topic since. And we see the same things all of you see. We come, we go, but sometimes we stay. And we have read the yellow page, the guidelines that talk about cooperation, and we try to follow those. I'm down to 5 minutes, and I want to talk about something that is very near, dear to my heart. I have one step and one tradition I really love because we always forget the second half. In the step portion, it's the third part. It's the 12th step, and it's that part that says, practice these principles in all our affairs. Some of you might have noticed as we stood in line waiting for buses last night, a few of us could have remembered that. My home group taught me that as I'm sitting there saying, I'm tired, my feet hurt, practice these principles in all our affairs. Practice these principles in all our affairs. The fifth tradition tells me that each group is autonomous. Has anybody ever heard that mention? Ah, but every group is autonomous. But every group is autonomous. But every group is autonomous. Except in matters affecting other groups and AA as a whole. We forget how many things we do in our group that affect AA as a whole. Instead of making our split to make sure that the work is being done by Alcoholics Anonymous of the district and the area and the GSO, we split our money on the picnic and the party that we're going to have. My group has an anniversary party. Group members donate the paper products and the soda, And each of us brings a main dish to make sure that we have a balanced amount of food. And we've done all those things in talking about what is our responsibility to AA as a whole. Many of you know this is not a seventh tradition workshop, but right now, how many of us here have come and spent $110 or $95 to register? And meanwhile, at the General Service Office, we're cutting down the number of visits that we are making to international AA groups because our donations are not coming. So we talk about the seventh tradition and how it is the spirit of sacrifice. I am here and I am blessed because Alcoholics Anonymous gave me my life back. And I intend to continue to share that with all levels of service. Because if I live to be 1,000 years old, I can never, ever give back to you what you gave to me. I walked out on my kids when my youngest daughter was 6 years old. And when she was 16, she said, "You're not my mother. My stepmother is my mother." And when she was 24 and I had several years sober, she said, "Mom, I want you to be in the delivery room when I have my baby." And 3 years ago, after getting a divorce, she came to me and said, "Mom, will you buy a house with me? Because I can't ever afford to buy one myself. And you gave me that. My home group gave me that." Alcoholics Anonymous and a power so much greater than me gave me that. Please don't leave before the miracle happens. Thank you.
Thank you, Michaeline. It's wonderful. Unity. That's what comes to mind when I think of home groups. When I think of my home group, the unity of the group is so powerful. You know, Michaeline had talked about, you know, having an anniversary or a picnic. You know, there's so many things that my group does that is so beautiful to me. You know, we have a picnic, an annual picnic. We have an anniversary dinner, which they're all potluck. You know, just bring a dish. We provide the entertainment, frisbee and football and all that good stuff. You know, we have a conference that we go to. It's springtime in the Ozarks, and the whole group we rent out a whole, you know, a motel, and we commandeer that place. We take over, you know, and it's so cool. You know, the unity. We have a retreat, you know, at a lake that we go to every year, and I think it just makes the bond so much stronger. You know, I can count on all of those people at my home group to always be there, you know, because I have that connection with them. You know, home group is about accountability, you know, being accountable to people, you know, and to Alcoholics Anonymous. And that's so, so very important. And it's so very attractive, you know. Sobriety, enthusiasm for sobriety is contagious. You know, and I can't make my home group members do anything. There's nothing that I can make them do, but I can lead by example. You know, I can be that person out there with my hand out. You know, I can be that person taking that newcomer to the coffee. I can be that person at my district meeting. I can be that person at my area meeting. You know, and it's neat to just watch everybody just kind of follow along. They just follow. It's like a domino effect. It's attractive. You know, it's so attractive. Enthusiasm is contagious. So we have a few minutes. This kind of a thing, microphone. Well, let's limit our talking to about, you know, a couple of minutes. So we have about 10 minutes. So if it's on, go ahead.
Hi, I'm Jean. I'm an alcoholic. I'm on fire for Alcoholics Anonymous. That's why I just thank you for everybody sharing. And thank you, Artie, for saying about the home group being the heartbeat of AA. I believe that. And what a name, like, what better name would it be for a group but called the home group? I mean, home for me means safety. Home means, like, there's a man in my home group, which is 7:30 meeting in Fitchburg, Wisconsin, at the Fitchburg Serenity Club that meets daily. His name is Scott J., and he always says to a newcomer that comes in, "Welcome home." And my home group, well, my sponsor's in my home group, That's important. But I see my home group when I'm out in the world. I'll see my home group where they all sit. And I feel every morning when I start my day there, I feel I've got the power to get through that 24 hours because I'm filled with love. I sometimes walk in filled with fear, but I always leave filled with love. I need my feet get me to the meetings. My head doesn't. I learned that too. And when I miss that group more than two or three days in a row, I start like not really being very kind to people and not being very happy in my life. And then I know I need to get back to my home group. But technically, I have kind of two home groups because my home group is a daily meeting, but I'm a treasurer of a home group of my group on timers, 9 o'clock a.m. at Covenant Presbyterian Church in Madison, Wisconsin. So I have a treasurer, kind of two home groups. I feel like home in both of them. But thank you for sharing. And the language of the heart is spoken in your home group. And if you don't feel the language of the heart in your group that you call your home group, it's not the right home group. So thank you.
Hi, family. My name's Mike. I'm an alcoholic. It's kind of weird because my first home group was at Fitchburg's Fraternity Club. But my home group is the best group in the world. It's Easy Does It Badua group in Oregon, Wisconsin. And somebody mentioned corrections. And my home group, everybody talks about these big meetings. My home group runs from about 12 people to 20 people. And everybody gets early because it's in the church boardroom. And if you don't get there 45 minutes early, you don't get one of those cushy boardroom chairs. So that's how we encourage people to come early. But we're real involved in corrections. A lot of us have all been outside sponsors to a local correction facility. And we actually go and pick up the guys and bring them to our meeting. In our meeting now, there's one guy who used to come there. He's 5 years sober. Another guy is 3 years sober and still a regular attendee at our meeting. Another guy in August 1st, if he makes it to August 1st, will have 21 years. And that's one of the things our group does for service is the corrections, which is so important because I sobered up, locked up too. So thank you.
My name is Larry. I'm an alcoholic. And my home group is the Saanich Peninsula 12-Step Group in Saanichton, British Columbia on Vancouver Island. I can just so relate in some ways and other ways I can't. I've never had the DUI. Never been behind bars, but my home group, we've just recruited our third member. So we've been two of us for quite a while. We had a large group, and it died out when my sponsor actually moved away to another town. He moved to Port Alberni, which is about a three-hour drive away, and a lot of people switched home groups at that point. I stayed there. I'm now GSR, treasurer, intergroup rep, literature, you name it, I do it. I have a service sponsor who wants me now to be DCM. And, oh, yeah, Grapevine rep for the district. So it's, to me, my home group is my blood life. And I just am so grateful to the other gentleman that's been a part of it with me and now a new sponsee who's 30 days sober who's joined us. Going to get him doing coffee when I get home. I'm just so grateful to be here and have this opportunity to be here. And Artie, I can so relate. I lost my father in April. And, you know, I have other groups. Our group is a once-a-week meeting, but there's other groups that I go to. And there was the fellowship that got me through my grieving. And that was just, I could so relate. Thank you.
My name's Tony. I'm a grateful recovered alcoholic, and good to hear you folks. The home group is very important. My original home group was the Monday night meeting that met on Tuesday, and that's another story unto itself. But I'm grateful to say that today it does meet on Monday night. I came to AA for the better part of a year and a half as a daily maintenance drinker. And my sobriety date is January 18th, 1986. But I came here as a daily maintenance drinker, and I came to meetings drunk. And at the break, I went out and I drank. And at the end of the meeting, I was still in the parking lot drinking. And amazingly, the gentleman said, amazingly, I never got a DWI. Don't have a clue on that. But I got tricked into coming because I got asked a question and I gave an answer that I didn't think they would do, and they did it. The Monday night meeting that met on Tuesday, it was a baloney meeting, a sandwich meeting. And I came to the meeting, and one guy that became my sponsor, Jim, he says, Tony, what's it going to take to get you to keep coming? And I said, well, you don't serve liverwurst. I said, I need liverwurst and rye. And, you know, the next Tuesday night, there was liverwurst and rye there. And I got a call because I wasn't there. And he said, the liverwurst and rye is waiting. I expect you here very shortly. And I ended up there. And I've been going ever since. But there are a lot of short stories like that. People in AA, they kept me coming. Nobody ever said, Tony, you're too drunk to come in here. They said, if you have to drink today, just keep coming. They didn't say, Tony, you stink too much. You can't sit next to us. They didn't say, Tony, you're too loud. You need to go to the back of the room. They said, sit down up front and try to pay attention. Don't compare. Try to identify with the feelings. And a lot of that just was gibberish. I mean, you know, it didn't even stop in the middle here. It went in here and out there. But I did. I kept coming. And it's but for the grace of God and you folks and this program. They told me I had to do three things. I had to get a sobriety date that didn't change. They told me I had to get a home group so that they knew where I was and where I wasn't. And that I had to get a sponsor. And he would know who I was and who I wasn't. All right? And it was those three things that that really kept me coming. And you talked about having your family in your life. My kids wouldn't be in the same room with me when I got sober. Not unless I made them sit there as punishment. You know? But, you know, I've been involved in both their weddings. I have grandkids today that I'm allowed to babysit alone. You know, it's truly amazing, and I couldn't even begin to express the gratitude. And you said if you were 1,000 years sober, I could never pay back what's been given to me. So thank you, thank you, thank you.
Hi, my name's Terry. I'm an alcoholic. Hi, Terry. So very grateful to be in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous this morning. And gosh, what an honor and a privilege to be at my very first convention ever. It's just been a fantastic experience, and it really feels like it's coming full circle for me today because I first got sober in Bloomington, Indiana, and my very first home group was Back to Basics that Michaeline spoke of, and Michaeline was my very first sponsor, and now, you know, that was back in November of 99, and I haven't found it necessary to take a drink since. And that truly is a miracle. It truly is a miracle. And, you know, I learned there, you know, people, I showed up there. I was straight out of treatment. Treatment van dropped me off there. I showed up there every Friday night. People expected to see us there. I didn't quite get it, didn't really know that I wanted, didn't know if I wanted to be sober, stay sober, knew I just wanted the pain to quit, and I wanted my life, I wanted the consequences to go away. I had no children, my children had all been taken away from me, I was looking at prison, and I just wanted the pain to go away. And I just kept showing up there, and people just kept telling me, keep coming back, get a sponsor, get a home group. And people were laughing there, and especially Michaeline. I've told this story a million times. I'm like, what is she so freaking happy about? I don't get it, you know. And but you know what? I kept sticking around, and I kept coming back, and I made her my sponsor, and I got to find out what she was so freaking happy about. You know, she had found the solution, and she was living the solution. Rick's here. Important part of my sobriety. You know, those people that were there when I first got sober, I'll never, ever be able to repay that debt. And just kept letting me show up. And so then, you know, my home group, I was a mess. And I would go in there and I would just puke stuff out. I have so many good things I've heard tonight. And they would just nod their heads, yes, and smile. And nobody tried to fix me or tell me what to do or anything. They just kept carrying the message that I didn't have to drink.
And I didn't drink, and things got better. And Michaeline loved me until I could learn to love myself. And when I finally became woman enough to go back to St. Louis and become a mother to my children, I was able to do that. And that's just been a huge gift. It was a scary, it was so scary when I went there, because then I had to find a new home group and a new sponsor. It took me forever to get the first one. And oh my gosh. And so I found a home group that had babysitting, because I did get to have my children back in my life. And I had children and went to a meeting that had babysitting. That's been my home group ever since. That's Into Action out of St. Louis, Missouri. We meet three nights a week. And we have babysitting at every meeting, and that's huge for me, because I would never want to find another woman to not be able to go to a meeting, to be able to find recovery because of not having childcare. And that was just a real passion for me. And they were real rigid. They were real strict. They didn't do AA like Back to Basics did it. It wasn't Bloomington, Indiana, but you know what? It was the same story everywhere I went. You know, just the same message of hope. And I am so truly blessed to be here today. I feel I haven't seen my very first sponsor since I left. Kept in touch, but haven't seen her. And truly, God working in my life today, and feeling like I'm just so very grateful to Alcoholics Anonymous. And thank you all for helping me stay sober. That's all I got.
My name is Josh. I'm an alcoholic. And I always will be. My home group is the God Group from Houston, Texas. My original home group, I became sober in Florida, Daytona Beach, was Easy Does It Group. And I came to this group, this meeting, and I appreciate all of your speaking. I came because I found, since coming to where I am, my area of Houston and Katy, Texas, I don't say all the groups, but I go to six or seven groups, that everybody votes at every group. There's no, like, I was used to a home group. There's no home groups. The only one is, the one that I belong to is somewhat like a home group. Of course, only seven people out of 75 stay for the group conscious meetings, but that's usual. So I feel that I'm missing out, really, on what we used to do in my home group, where they taught me how to be sober, where they told me I didn't have to have a drink today. I only came because I wanted to learn how to have two drinks. And all you people insisted that I was an alcoholic, and that is the first drink that does it. And I agree with you 100%, and thank you for being here.
Good morning, everybody. I'm Mike, and I'm an alcoholic. My home group is the Open Door Group. It's a 9 a.m. Sunday morning group in a treatment center where I detoxed at 28 years ago. And I go there every Sunday morning. I totally agree, you know, your home group is where you do service and all that. Too bad there isn't enough service work, or, you know, in the group for everybody. So the question is how do you know where your home group is, you know? And I had to do a talk at a spiritual retreat a few weeks ago, and one of the things that came out in my talk was how do you know that? How do you know where that is? And I came up with this, and it's that meeting that if they don't know your name, and they want to find the short, gray, bald-headed guy, overweight, that guy, you know, everybody can say, go to the Sunday morning meeting, the 9 a.m. open door group, and that guy will be there. Don't know his name, don't have his phone number, that guy will be there. That's your home group. And I've been going there for a long, long time, and that's important. There's a lot of consistency in Alcoholics Anonymous is really, really important. This is my third convention, and whenever I got bummed out because I'm going through the thing and I'm frantic, I can't find my home group, the topic, my home group. I couldn't find my wife's, like, I seen it. You know, this is the third one. I remember coming to one. I can't remember if it was Minneapolis maybe, but it was after 9/11, and there was a New York group that was talking about their home group and relocating or whatever. And it was very emotional, you know, and so I just don't miss this one. It's very, very important. So thank you for being here.
Hi, everybody. I'm Casey, and I'm an alcoholic. And my home group is the Rebellion Dogs Group in Choctaw, Oklahoma. I My service position has given me the privilege of traveling all across the state and visiting several hundred home groups. And the theme of this conference is A Vision for You, and it's been just a wonderful experience to travel group to group to group and visit and be a part of. You know, I feel like last night we attended the greatest home group in the world. You know, say a prayer with 60,000 friends. That's a heck of a home group. And the thing is what I felt last night is when we gathered up and said a prayer was the same thing I've felt in every group I've ever visited in Oklahoma and across the United States. There's a spirit inside the home group that is just unbelievable and unshakable. My home group, like I said, when I first moved to Choctaw, I've had two home groups. Both of them are the closest one to my front door. And when I got to Nakoma Park and went to this little group, it was just a meeting. They met one night a week, and I was there for a few months. And I said, you know, I think we need to have another meeting. And the guy started telling me, well, this is just a meeting. And I said, well, it takes a lot of commitment. And I said, give me the keys. And I've made coffee every Monday night for 8 years now there, and I love it. And we started a closed meeting. So we have a closed meeting and an open meeting, and pretty soon it quit being just a meeting, and now there's 15 of us that call the Rebellion Dogs a home group. And there's a spirit in there. There's some guys that carry a meeting to jail, and we've got a GSR now, and we've got an intergroup rep, and we, by just dumb luck, they have an area chairman in that meeting, and it's amazing. A newcomer walks in, and they get that. They get the best Alcoholics Anonymous has to offer. What I've gained from traveling around and going to many, many, many home groups is that newcomers are in good hands. That the benchmark of a healthy home group is the one that opens the door to Alcoholics Anonymous. They don't say that AA begins and ends here. They say this is the keys to the kingdom. Come on, go to AA with us. So thank you.